Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout Podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by...
Ben Errington.
How's it going, Ben? You alright?
I'm good. How are you, Luke?
Not too bad. You might hear some... like crunching sounds in the background. This is my cat. He's eating some food, and it's not a witch in the woods at night.
Oh yeah, that would have been interesting if you set up some
sound effects,
atmospheric sounds to go off at random intervals around your room.
Yeah,
that would be it's creepy.
I've directed Oscar to get noshing on that cat food just for that sound effect.
Little padded feet going around the room. What is that?
You might hear like a little girl like laughing and screaming, but it's cat upstairs putting a voice on.
Okay, I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad to know.
Okay, so what did we do last week? We talked about Dracula, which was your favourite film, I think, so far, to a degree. So today we are on number... What number are we on?
I think this is going to be episode 12. But I think it's number 11.
As in 39. That sound
right?
Okay. Cool. Today we're talking about the Blair Witch Project, which is a pretty iconic film, I think. Do you want to tell a little bit about it?
No problem. The Blair Witch Project is a 1999 American psychological horror film written, directed, and edited by Daniel Myrick and Eduardo Sanchez. The film tells the fictional story of three student filmmakers, Heather Donahue, Michael C. Williams, and Joshua Leonard, who hike in the Black Hills near Burkittsville, Maryland in 1994 to film a documentary about a local legend known as the Blair Witch. The three disappear, but their video and sound equipment, along with most of the footage they shot, is discovered a year later, and the recovered footage is the film the viewer is watching.
Cool. So this is what the Empire magazine had to say about it. It wasn't the springboard its director and crew might have hoped after banking $250 million from their nano-budget horror. But the Blair Witch Project's legacy continues apace. It's instructive to see how little Adam Wingard's surprise sequel deviates from the setup and formula of the original. Bunch of kids head into the Black Hills, record the results on the shakiest of shaky cams 17 years later. At the time, it sparked a revolution in the genre. Since then... have come dozens of imitators, although even the best of them fall short of replicating projects. Disorienting chills, twigs and bits of foliage have never been so scary. Rotten Tomatoes got 86% fresh, 81% on Metacritic, and Mr. Ebert gave it 4 out of 4. This is what he classes as a great film. Yeah. So on Facebook, in the Horror Hangout Board of Advisors, Johan Chipol says, "Personally, I find... while it has its effective moments, such as the ending and the attack on the tent, this has not aged that well for me. The film itself is too slow and hasn't got enough to keep you invested for the long term. Too much of it seems to be whinging, and yeah, it does add to the realism. It felt as if there was no real structure or even a good story to be told, just a bunch of set pieces. Better found footage films have evolved from the template that this film has set." So, I mean, How do you feel about it? Did you enjoy watching it this time? This wasn't the first time you've seen it at all, right? How many times do you think you've seen it?
How many times? 10 or so, I reckon.
Really?
Over the history. I used to be really into this film when it first came out. Simply because of the whole like mythology that surrounded it and everything to do with it. Because obviously it was the first mainstream found footage film that kicked everything off, wasn't it? I mean, I think there was possibly something that came before it that maybe influenced it slightly. I might have to sort of find that reference in a second. I think around about the time it came out, so 1999, so I was like 13, maybe like 12 or 13, and when this film came out, the rumors were that it was real. And I know that it sort of like captured the imagination of a lot of sort of like film fans and everyone alike that kind of did kind of believe it was real, because found footage films weren't something that had sort of been found. And all the viral marketing that sort of came before and around about the time of the release was pretty believable. Everything you kind of heard about this film was like, is this film real? That was one of the things that when you to tell people about it, they go, that's the film that's real, isn't it? Yeah. So just going into it, the first time you see it as sort of like a kid or like a teenager with such an open mind thinking, is this film real?
Yeah.
When you first see it, it is utterly, utterly terrifying. And I can imagine how, of course, looking back on some of the techniques and some of the way the found footage stuff is delivered now hasn't aged so well, but I think because I hold it in such high regard simply because of how I first experienced it, it does still work for me.
Yeah.
Everything kind of feels classic. Nothing feels cheap. Everything feels, essentially it is just a lot of people, a bunch of guys get lost and there's a lot of set pieces and the creepy level kind of like builds and the tension builds. But I think there's a lot of stuff in this film which is not so obvious. I think it's got quite a lot of layers to it. It's very much an onion of a film. It's got a lot of layers, and when you, do you know what I mean, when you're really, really listening to it, I mean, the sound work on it is superb. I think a lot of the performances are great. Mm. Like these aren't professional. I'm sure they're professional actors, but you know what I mean. They're not like movies. They're not movie stars at this point.
Yeah.
I think they're amazing. All three of the performances, I believe wholeheartedly. From start to finish. And I think the pacing of it's really good. I think everything we get at the start with the sort of the stories from the locals just feel real, because they are real people telling their experiences of this legend of the Blair Witch. So you kind of become invested in it in that way. And I think the shaky cam stuff, like it doesn't affect me that much. I mean, it says the shakiest of shaky cams, but I've seen shakier. I've seen shaky cams. I'm like, I literally cannot watch that. Yeah. That is insane. In terms of like the found footage genre, I guess you could say it's a genre, found footage style in horror. It's not something that I'm really a fan of. There are probably five or six films that like I genuinely would say I like with the found footage style. Blair Witch being the jewel in the found footage crown.
Yeah. So I've only seen this film twice that I remember. So the first time I saw it, so it came out when I was 11. So I was like, you know, primary school, going on secondary school. And like, I kind of believed there was stuff in it. Like, I kind of believed in demons and stuff like that to a certain extent. And so I remember watching it and I remember being absolutely terrified. Like, because you're right, like everyone was telling you at school, this is real, this is like this documentary of these people getting killed. And it was a really like weird like experience just seeing what you think is real, like some sort of proof of witches and demons and stuff. And I mean, you're right, the performances are so good. If they were, there's nothing like actory about the performances, that it just feels like watching people like slowly lose their mind and sort of trying to handle what's happening to them.
Yeah, and lose their mind and take it out on each other, which you kind of think, that's exactly how it would go down. Like, there are no choices made by these characters that you think that's a stupid choice to make.
Yeah,
everyone kind of deals with things the same way you would, because you know, you're just, what would you try and do if you're lost in the woods? You just try and get not lost. Yeah. you just keep walking so you are not lost. That's what you would do. like in other fan footage films or in other horror films where these kind of things happen. You know, there's no, when people get split up in this film, they just get split up naturally because they're running, because they're terrified. Yeah. They're literally running away from each other. There's no moments where they go, hey, how about we split up? Or there's no moments where, there's no horror movie cliches that you see in this. Some things maybe have become cliche simply because
of this, I think.
Because of this. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But there are no horror movie cliches that are done. And nothing's phoned in. Nothing's phoned in at all. It feels,
yeah,
it feels shit out.
So the first time I watched it, I went in thinking that it was a real thing, and I bought into that viral marketing. Second time I watched it, the other night, I knew it was a film. I knew it was a narrative, a fiction piece, and I still loved it. I still thought it was great. Like, because it's so natural. It's like a mumblecore indie film, but so scary. Like, although it is kind of boring in sort of spaces, like the pace gets a bit slow, but I only think that sort of adds to the sort of dread that he's sort of building throughout the film. And that final act is terrifying. Yeah.
Exactly. I think it's the like pedestrian moments that are like split up these moments of like uncertainty that make this film so scary. Because, you know, it's just some people walking in the woods at some point. And when it's daytime, like the fact that they can just take really simple things in the daytime and make it like blood curdling. make it like just like seeing something weird, seeing like a pile of stones outside a tent.
It's like the noises like, as well, the sound effects and the noises. So like, just like pick out new bits that like, when they're like strained to listen, they're like, can't you hear that? Listen. And then you just hear like, you're trying to listen to yourself and you hear like these rocks or like twigs or like occasionally like a child laugh. And I was like, Jesus Christ, what was that?
I'd love to see like a really detailed making of this. I mean, I don't think there's too much out of there. I think there was a sort of like a viral video, which I think was something of the Blair Witch, which came out around about the same time, which was sort of a bit more of an analysis of the found footage and what they think thought happened. But I'd love to see a making of to see what people are actually doing when those sounds were being made, when what sounds like loads of branches breaking like in the distance. I'd love to see what people were doing.
So I would say, I think, are you of the opinion that people like younger audiences who have seen many a found footage film would come into this and maybe be a bit bored by it?
Incredibly, which is unfortunate, obviously, but I guess that's just the way it goes with the found footage stuff, which has been kind of overdone, but done badly more than it's been done well. So the fact that you see found footage stuff and you go, the one thing you say when you see found footage films is, why are they still filming?
But with
this film, you kind of understand why they're still filming, because they're there to capture what they're experiencing. And obviously there was a lot of why are we still filming that said, well, actually it's only said a few times. And we understand that Heather is like, it's all I have left. Yeah. And then also I think it might be Joshua.
Yeah.
Josh who says, looking through the camera lens is almost like you're not looking at real life.
Yeah.
It's almost like
removes
a filter
you from the immediate situation.
So with kind of like two throwaway lines, you already understand these characters' sort of reasons for still filming and you believe them. Whereas in other stuff, when, you know, say in a film when someone's getting dragged by their foot by a monster and they're still filming it, that kind of stuff, you're like, no. No. Camera would be officially dropped.
Out of curiosity, what would you say, is there any other found footage films that come straight to you that you think, oh, okay, that's a good one? Do you know what I mean? Is there any that stand out to you?
Wreck,
yeah, that's good. That's later on the list as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's terrifying. That's a terrifying film. And that's done really well. You think found footage zombie film, you can kind of know what you're in for, but that film is terrifying and has possibly got one of the most tense moments in a found footage film ever. So that one. There's probably what would you say, Cloverfield?
Oh yeah, Cloverfield. Yeah, to take it to movie monster sort of territory. But yeah, I think Cloverfield's great. I would say VHS 1 and 2. Have you seen them? Did you rate them?
I've seen VHS 1. I've not seen the second.
They are a bit hit and miss just because they are like little short stories. But the ones that do hit, I think, are very effective. I think VHS 1, that first one where they're like going out to meet women. And then
and it's like a little classic.
I thought it was really interesting. Really. I like to see them. I like to see how they took that. It just showed you how sort of far they've come from this film to what they do now with found footage. And like you said, a lot of it's bad, but sometimes it's some good stuff.
Any like found footage ghost hunting films, found footage demon hunting films, like I just think, you know.
Oh, Trollhunter. Sorry, I would say Trollhunter. Oh, yeah. Well. That's Troll so good.
Trollhunter is great though, isn't it? Because it's like, it's kind of, it's proper like in your face, but
yeah,
in such a good way.
It's got like a wink and a like a fire slap with every part of Trollhunter. I love it.
But there's plenty of absolutely awful ones that I've seen. One that comes to mind, Chernobyl Diaries. I think I saw that like a couple of years ago. That's pretty cool. The thing is, it's just an easy way for these studios to make horror films that I guess aren't as big budget. And they feel like they can kind of like tell the story, and the narrative's got an easy way to go because, you know, it's just. But
sorry, another one as well. Paranormal Activity. It's probably worth mentioning. Slightly different, but it's that super low budget, like not much happening, but it's creepy enough to keep it going, and that started a whole franchise as well.
The first one, though, everything else after the first one is garbage.
Garbage, yeah. So let's. I mean, I don't know how much we could talk about the story really, because there's. We'll see what we do with it. The key players, we've got Heather, who is, are they students or are they just?
I'm assuming Heather's a student. Right. I think they're all film students, but this is Heather's project. This is Heather's pet project that she's kind of like brought in the talents of these guys to produce this documentary.
So we've got Heather, she's like the directive producing force behind it. We've got Mike, who they hire to do the sound. They don't know him going in, but he seems like a cool guy to get along with him pretty well right from the get-go. And then Josh is the cameraman. He's got the 16mm camera. He I think him and Heather go back a little bit. Maybe they'd study together or something. I'm not too sure. There's only three characters. I mean, there are sort of more bit parts, but they're the characters we stick with throughout the entire film. It's like you said, like the acting and the dynamics between the characters is really honest and sort of realistic.
Yeah, I like how early in the film we get a little bit of them sort of like bonding and sort of like just hanging out, having a beer in their motel. So we can sort of see that side of them. It doesn't feel too forced either. I think sometimes in films like this, the relationship between like your main characters can feel a little bit forced.
Yeah.
And usually there's like a love interest or something like that. You haven't really got that here, which is good, and I kind of feel that, I feel I can already connect with these three people before.
I did read that they were thinking of doing a love interest plotline between Heather and Josh, but it sort of never happened, which I'm kind of glad they didn't. That would have felt a little bit forced. Okay, so the story starts. Heather is making a documentary about the Blair Witch. She's roped in her friends. We start with her. Filming herself, and sort of it sort of gives you an idea of the format of the film, which at the time was probably quite important to have. This is how this is happening, because I don't think there would be much of this before. People might go into the cinema and think, "What are we watching?" Like,
Hey, I paid for a film here. I'm just watching someone's "You've Been Framed" compilation.
Okay, so and then they go around interviewing some locals. You might know more about the sort of the mythology, because I think a lot of it comes from these initial interviews, right?
Back in the day, so not long after this film came out, I got pretty big into the mythology. I used to read like quite a lot of books, like companion books with it. And there was also a game series, like a PC game series, which was kind of like a bit of the mythology, kind of like took place in like the 1800s, and then there was stuff in the 1940s. Which kind of focused on Rustin Parr, who was the hermit who lived in the woods and kidnapped all the kids in like the 40s, and said that he was sort of like made to do it by this Blair Witch. It was pretty creepy, the games. If you ever seen them, there were a lot of like, it was almost like a Resident Evil style like third person camera, like a camera sort of not over the shoulder, but sort of like. Fixed camera angle.
Okay.
And you'd sort of walk around these creepy little shacks and the woods and stuff, and there'd be like ghosts that would suddenly appear out of nowhere and just like drift through. I mean, it's still pretty terrifying. I watched some clips on YouTube recently, but it's
yeah,
it's pretty horrible. But yeah, all the stuff to do with like Rustin Parr and the sort of legend in Burkittsville about girls going missing and sort of tales of people, because this is the thing, these initial tales of people who have seen the Blair Witch and describing her. I mean, this stuff's scary. This stuff is terrifying. The fact that you don't, you're pretty much creating the sort of division of the Blair Witch in your head at this point.
Yeah.
And there is a drawing. There's a drawing as well. Do we see the drawing early on in the film?
I don't remember seeing a drawing. But I think so.
I think possibly the drawing was in some companion pieces, but you see the drawing of this sort of like figure with sort of like a cloak up like this and sort of like a hairy body. When we talk to one of the when the three characters talk to that woman about the sort of everything she knows about Coffin Rock, which was the place where the five men were ritualistically murdered in the 19th century, and all their bodies were sort of like strapped together. And then when the authorities came back to get the bodies were gone.
Mm.
So that was one of the stories they were telling. They spoke to two fishermen regarding that story, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's pretty creepy. But yeah, when they speak to the old woman, who, I mean, she's clearly a bit kooky.
I think her name's Mary.
Mary, yeah.
Yeah.
She's clearly a bit kooky. You know, she says she's into like ballet and...
The interviewers, our main characters, like kind of laugh her off, like say she's insane, like just ignore her. But yeah, she talks about the hairy woman, right?
Yeah, yeah. So she talks about like going up to the area near Coffin Rock with her dad, didn't she?
Yeah.
In her fishing, and the woman that obviously she thinks is the Blair Witch sort of appears, doesn't really say anything. But she's covered in like a really coarse, like dark fur, like on her arms. And then she opens like a shawl that she's got and she's covered in hair.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, nice. just hearing this creepy, lovely. Oh yes.
Yeah.
Just hearing this sort of story from this woman, even though she's clearly a bit of a kook, you kind of believe her. You're like, oh Jesus, that is pretty terrifying.
Yeah. And there's also, someone at some point mentioned they saw, a woman whose feet never touch the ground. There's that story, and there's also the story about, I think it was the children who got murdered when the man, is it Rustin Parr, he made them face the corner.
So Rustin Parr was the guy who sort of abducted and killed some kids in the woods in the 40s. And so that's obviously quite key that he, when he had two of them, he would make one face the corner while he killed the other one because he didn't like eyes on him.
Yeah, yeah. So they get like all these stories from these locals, and they make their way into the woods where they find the fishermen, and they get a couple more stories from those. One of the fishermen says it's all true, and the other one's just saying that it's all bullshit. But like it's all just adding to the.
They had a real big row when the documentary team left. Why you got to mug me off, lad, in front of them? Why you got to mug me off, lad? I was telling a real good story that I did. Yeah. Oh, you're talking shit, mate. They had a scuffle.
Yeah.
One then the Blair Witch game was gone.
Yeah. Gobbled them up. So then they sort of make their way into the woods and they find... I don't know how soon it is into it, because there's a lot at this point, they're just sort of walking through the woods and having a good time. Laughing, they're making friends with Mike. They're smoking all the time. Lots of smoking, yeah. I noticed.
They're doing a lot of walking, but they're doing a lot of smoking at the same time. I mean,
yeah,
their poor lungs are going to be terrified, aren't they?
And then they sort of find like a cemetery. I think a cemetery. It's like the seven little piles of rocks.
Yeah, so they do claim it's like a little cemetery that they find, and there's these little piles of like little man-made piles of rocks.
Yeah,
which I always find those pretty creepy.
Yeah, yeah. And then they sort of camp out for the night, I think.
One of them knocks over one of the little piles of rocks. Which Heather is not happy about. She's fuming you didn't just knock the bloody rocks over, did you? Oh, you've stitched us right up. We're stuck now.
She starts to like pile them back up, but it still just looks like a little pile of rocks. Like I didn't see any sort of, there wasn't any sort of pattern to them, and she didn't sort of rebuild a tower. She just moved some rocks around. I went
pretty weak, a pretty weak effort from Heather at undoing what I'm assuming is they've been cursed. Then that's it. You knock over the Blair Witch's pile of rocks.
I thought it was an alarm system for the Blair Witch. Like she knows then. Yeah, something like
she
triggered.
Was somewhere.
Yeah, it triggered a little red light in a bat cave.
So, yeah, and she started gluing her fur on, ready to go out. But that is it. Yeah. You wait. Wherever you are, I'm going to find you.
Yeah.
Just got to do it all now.
Putting on a Pokemon onesie. That's all it was. It was like a dirty Pikachu onesie. And
just rolling around in the undergrowth.
Yeah. So then they camp out for the night, and then they wake up, and I think this is when we start hearing like noises, like there's twigs snapping. And like the sound work is good in this. Like you do find yourself listening for... like what the hell it is they're trying to listen to.
The twig snapping is not too extreme at this point, is it?
It's
quite just a few bits and bobs, quite sort of like distant. You can kind of hear a few things, but I think they kind of pass it off as being
cats eating food somewhere. Like
there's a cat somewhere breaking little twigs to make its nesting home.
Yeah. And then I think they pass it off as animals. Or they think they're like local people trying to
Them out. This is quite paranoid. From I think it's Mike who might say this, but he kind of says it's the locals that we saw. You know, they're trying to freak us out. They followed us up here and they're trying to freak us out. But again, that's kind of passed off as being that's way too paranoid at this point.
Yeah.
Like would the locals really bother doing that? Probably not.
No. So then, I think Mike's the first one who starts to freak out a bit. But I think it's mainly because this isn't his film. Like he's just come along for the ride and he's sort of assumed these people know what they're doing. And like he started to realize that he realizes that something's going a bit awry. And it's not quite as professional as he thought it would be. So there's a bit of tension brewing now between Mike and the other two, but mainly between Mike and Heather. Because Heather's like constantly... I've got a film that's like she's constantly trying to make a film. She's constantly like being Mrs. Producer, Bossy Pants. And like Mike and Josh, I think maybe just want to chill out a little bit more and just sort of get home and get it done with.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's the thing. They, in terms of creative control, it's entirely her, isn't it? So,
yeah.
And obviously, it's quite frustrating because she's kind of like directing them as well, as in sort of telling them which way they're walking at any one time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because she's got the map as well and she's telling them and like, they are not sure if she really knows where they are or where they're going. But Heather keeps saying, "No, I know where we are. I know exactly where we are."
And exactly. It's not that fit. We've all got that friend.
Yeah.
We've all got that friend who's always like, "Yeah, it's this way. I know a little shortcut down this way. Come on, follow me." And you go along with it, but you're like, "This guy has absolutely no idea where he's taking us."
Yeah.
This way. It's much quicker. And then you end up like on a 3-hour walk somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's the same guy who says, "Yeah, I'll be there in 20 minutes." Yeah, 20 minutes, 20 minutes. Like, of course. 4 hours later.
Yeah, and then you say, "What took you?" He said, "Oh, I had a bath." I've had that from before. No, in fact, I think we were like getting ready to go out, and we dropped a friend off to pick up his stuff and get changed, and he was half an hour later, and he came out and said, "Oh, I had a bath." Just waiting in the car for ages.
He was just chilling out, listening to Enya.
This little squeaky duck.
I fell asleep in the bath as well. Slid right under.
So the morning after they camp out, they're like trying to make their way back to the car, and I don't think they find it. I think they're getting frustrated. They don't get there, and then they have to camp out again. I think Heather convinces them to camp out one more night, but like I think at that point they're like, "Well, I need to." Mike's like, "I need to take my sound equipment back. It's got to be back in first thing in the morning." Josh is like, "I've got to take the camera back. Otherwise, they're going to get fined. They're going to have to pay for an extra day, and it's going to cost them some money." I think even Mike even has to go to his job.
Yeah,
and they're already like, I remember Josh is saying, "Okay, so if we don't turn up tomorrow, my girlfriend's going to notice I'm not there. She's going to be alerting the authorities." So I mean, they're already sort of realizing that they're going to be a little bit lost in these woods.
Yeah, exactly. And even though it's only been a couple of days, they're already like over schedule and it's affected their normal day-to-day life. So so those frustrations and annoyances are already seeping in. And obviously, even though they're all in the same situation and they're all lost together, they do aim those frustrations particularly at Heather.
Yeah.
for obviously for a multitude of reasons.
She is quite annoying. I found myself getting frustrated with her. It's like just showing the map, she was quite an annoying character, but like it's believable, like completely believable. I believe she's an annoying person in real life.
Yeah, but at the same time, like Mike and Josh, I thought perhaps they would have taken control if she was being so annoying, and do you know what I mean, and she wasn't getting them back. I probably would have maybe taken control. I'm not saying I would have been any better in that situation. I probably wouldn't have been. You know what I mean? But I maybe would have taken control of it a little bit more. Whereas these guys kind of like just accept the fact that she's possibly not got them lost, but she can't get them unlost.
Yeah,
just get them unlost, mate.
So then they camp out again, and then this time is there more noises? And this time it sounds like, I do remember it sounded like rocks were like banging against rocks.
Yeah, there's a very distinct clanging noise.
Yeah,
that you know what I mean. It's a nice noise, but not a noise I want to hear if I was in the middle of the woods night. Yeah, so the clanging noise, which either sounds like it strangely sounds like, you know, when like trees fall down.
Oh yeah. No, this sounds
a bit. It sounds a bit like that, and obviously, it's pretty extreme at this point in this time that they're hearing it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The noises are extreme, so it's like, what?
Yeah.
The locals are fucking with us again.
Yeah.
Really?
And then Mike's now freaking out to the point where he's saying, "I think he's like, we need to get back. We need to go now. Because if it is local people, they're kind of crazy for coming out here and doing that, and doesn't want to get involved. And if it's not local people, then what the fuck is it? And he doesn't want to be involved. Like either way, like he understands it's going to be something bad's happening. Go on.
This already is, for me, when I watched this, like a 13-year-old kid, I used to, do you know what I mean? Me and my friends used to camp occasionally. There was sort of some like a rural area not far from where we lived, and we used to go and camp there. And this felt like really real to me, because I remember being like in a tent in the middle of the night and hearing something.
Yeah.
Or hearing something, and you're like, what the hell is that? And then after watching this film, if I ever did it again, it was just like, Blair Witch, gotta be the Blair Witch, gotta be the Blair Witch.
Yeah.
So it's obviously, that's the thing. Sometimes the best horror films and the best moments in horror films are things that you can really relate to.
Yeah.
And this stuff, where you just see the inside of a tent, you know what I mean? That's,
yeah.
And all you can hear is like the distant stuff. It's just like, sweet baby Jesus.
I remember as well, we used to live in quite a rural area growing up, and we used to walk through these woods a lot. And I do remember once we walked a normal route, but then we didn't seem to have gone anywhere. Like we'd seem to have, I don't know what happened. Maybe we just sort of had like a mind fart and we hadn't walked like properly, like just sort of limping over. But like, I remember like, think it very much felt like the woods had started over again. Like it was so weird. But even then I was thinking, oh my God, the Blair Witch. Something's out there.
Yeah. It's almost like you're in a computer game, like an old computer game where they'd taken the environment and just duplicated it somewhere else, in the woods or something, and you're just like, oh my God, I'm going around in a circle. But woods are pretty scary places, you know, because
they are when you sort of have no reference points.
You have no reference points except for like that porn mag that you that was just on the ground. That was like a couple of miles back. What's happened to them as well? Porn mags used to be on the ground constantly in woods. Yeah. These days, nothing.
Just now just like phones with dirty internet
histories. It's just a USB.
Sticky USB key.
Oh,
I don't know.
Oh no.
Okay. And then they so they wake up that morning after, and then there's like three piles of rocks now on each side of the tent. So now they're completely freaking out because something's obviously been there, and there's obviously you know, been around their tent and around their stuff. So then they make their way again, and I think now they're like, if we just keep walking south, we will eventually get out of these woods.
Yeah, because they just decide on a direction there, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. They're like, let's just keep going in one direction. The woods aren't that big. They should eventually sort of find their way out. And Heather keeps saying, this is America. We're built over, like, all these places. But America's massive. Like, I'm sure you can quite easily get lost in woods in America.
How many times do these guys cross a river, like, on a log as well? I mean, this happens so many times. It's like, oh, there's a lovely log across this river. Let's go across this. I'm pretty sure we've been here before.
Yeah.
Nah, it's a different log across the river. It looks about the same to me now.
So
With the stone pile sort of outside the tent, I mean, that's freaky because you think whatever it is has done it. They've literally been feet away from them.
Yeah,
and I just imagine a moment, you know, where one of them's gone, God, I really need a piss in the middle of the night, and they've just unzipped it. And it's just a Blair Witch there, just like making Oh!
Don't mind me.
Oh, you bloody startled me then.
Oh, you caught me. You caught me.
You caught me. Furry body.
Yeah. I've been in those situations where you need to piss in the middle of the night camping as well. That's terrifying as well, just being outside and looking in the shadows and everything seems to be moving around you. So it's like this film plays into those sort of camping fears. In fact, they should have put that scene in. They should have had someone going out for a piss. When they went out and they heard the noises, they were like, do you hear that? And then it turned into just a guy having a piss on a tree. It's Mike. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Sorry, that clanging noise was just my urine hitting against the trunk of this tree.
Yeah.
I know. I need to get checked out.
So they're now freaking out. So Heather has lost the map. And she's the one who's supposed to be in charge. She's convinced someone's taken it. Now they're all freaking out and they're really pissed off at Heather. They keep walking, and then Mike sort of like breaks into like a laughing fit, and he says he kicks the map into some creek because he said it was pointless. It's not like he was so frustrated, angry. He sort of just thought, "Let's just get rid of it," which is kind of a stupid thing to do. But they get into a bit more of a fight.
Well, it's a real stupid thing to do. They go apeshit on his ass at this point.
They do,
don't they?
Josh is like ready to spark him out.
He's really give him a knuckle sandwich, mate.
Yeah. And then they find eventually they keep walking and they find the like the stick figures. Do you know what I mean? What do they call those? They're like
Just like stick figures, humanoid figure. I don't know, like weird.
And is it? I was thinking about this when I saw him. Like that's that kind of symbol of like the stick men thing. I've seen that a lot, like in various other pop culture things like film and comics and stuff. Was that even a thing before Blair Witch? Or is that, I know there's probably like pagan stuff and Wiccan stuff that looks similar.
I'm sure, there's probably something similar, and it's probably just, they've just evolved an idea or something. Is there anything like that in the Wicker Man? I don't know.
Well, probably, but I don't think it's quite as,
because they look, they're not like really complicated.
No.
They're kind of just some bundles of sticks, kind of like, put together.
Yeah.
So they obviously find Knitwoodies in the trees, and at this point it's kind of like I get the impression that they've stumbled across this just as a place. It's not like these figures represent them in any way or represent anything there.
I think so too. Yeah.
It's kind of like they just stumble across this weird area, which is possibly somewhere that the Blair Witch does some of these killings or some sort of
ritual magic, place.
Sort of ritual stuff, yeah.
And then I think they camp out again at this point. And then that's the night where
that's the night where shit hits the fan, pretty much. The Blair Witch is like, right, I've teased you enough. That was foreplay in comparison to what I'm going to do to you now, guys. So obviously now we hear the noises. Now we hear the children or whatever, horrible noises.
Yeah.
But then the Blair Witch kicks it up a notch. and start shaking the fucking tent.
That was scary. And then, and then they sort of run away. Is this point where they're running away? And she's like, "Oh my god, did you see that?"
Yeah, that's the thing. That is the goosebumps, hair on the back of the neck thing. You don't see anything. It's just her reaction to seeing something.
I read that the Blair Witch was supposed to be in that scene, in that shot. She was stood to the left, and the cameraman was supposed to film her saying, "Did you see that?" or whatever Heather said. And it was supposed to quickly pan left to see her, like a silhouette of her or something, and pan back.
Look, I got goosebumps then. Like that's creepy. Just like I can imagine exactly what it would have looked like.
Yeah, yeah. Even like knowing that she stood there now sort of makes it sort of creepy. So they run away, and there's like there's horrible noises and stuff. And I think they sort of hide out in the woods until the morning. I think that's about 5 a.m. About an hour later, the sunrise, and they go back, and Josh's stuff has been like scattered across the campsite, and it's all covered. They just call it a slime. But I wonder if it's like animal fat or something, something gross. But then now they're like completely sort of freaking out. And then you get those scenes that you were mentioning earlier when I think she's still filming, and Josh is like, "Why are you filming?" And because she needs that separation.
So we understand the witch has possibly like taken some stuff of Josh's as well.
Yeah.
Some little bits and bobs, maybe. Yeah, I think that whole bit was. I remember. I think that was this whole section, up until when they go back to the campsite. For me, in this film, was probably the scariest bit.
Hmm.
Not just because of like them running in the woods, but just that reaction from Heather, the way she sort of like screams.
Yeah,
what the hell is that?
Yeah, it's effective, isn't it? Yeah,
that's horrible. I mean, afterwards, it could have had them talking about it a little bit. Did you see that? Because obviously. There could have just been a line or two where she sort of explained what she thought she saw, possibly, that could have amped up that terror a bit, you know. I saw a furry Chewbacca woman just floating, coming at me.
I think time sort of, I think they sort of speed up the pace of the film now, because that next day, they're walking, and we have the sort of the repeated, well, they've been walking all day. We get the idea they've been walking for hours and hours and hours, and then they just come across the same log, and they realize they've just been walking around in circles or something strange is happening. And then I think they camp, and then Josh is... when does Josh disappear? Is it that night?
I think it's this night, yeah. So obviously there's a bit before where Josh is kind of like losing his mind a little bit, and he's putting the camera right in Heather's face, saying there's no one here to help you, and what's your motivation, and constantly... almost like taunting her, as if she's responsible for everything that's kind of been happening. Their circumstances are entirely her fault. And her recording the events like constantly is a little bit too much for the scenario they're in. So yeah, now we're starting to see them really start to unravel.
Yeah.
But I think it's happened at a nice pace. We feel like there's been enough days that have passed that you can imagine, of course, mentally, physically, they're going to be exhausted and things are going to start to unravel. And it's quite demoralizing the fact that they find the same log again. And they're like, we've pretty much wasted a whole day just walking round and round and round.
You sort of feel physically exhausted, as you know they would be, because you know it's been like not just a couple of hours jaunt, like an 8 hour long walk or something. Like it's a whole day lost.
Yeah. So at this point, did you sort of get the full originally when you watched it? Did you kind of think that they were trapped in some sort of never ending loop and that there wasn't any way out, or did you genuinely just think they were lost, or maybe they were being tricked into walking in the same area?
I thought it was like supernatural sort of
parallel dimension.
I thought they were trapped in something.
See, when I first saw it, I never kind of thought that. It was only I kind of thought maybe they were being sort of like coerced into going a certain direction each time, which kind of kept them in this area.
Yeah.
But the more you watch this film, the more you do kind of think, actually, yeah, they clearly are stuck in some sort of, and obviously with the sequel, the film that came out last year,
confirm that, yeah,
they kind of confirm it and sort of elaborate on it to quite an extreme degree, whereas in this film it is very, very subtle. And I think I quite like that, the fact that, as I said, about this film having layers, it kind of initially you could just see it as these guys are lost in the woods, but the more you kind of pick away at it and the more layers you sort of find out, the kind of creepier it gets, and the more you kind of feel pretty terrified for these guys.
So the morning after Josh has disappeared, they're obviously like shaken. But then And I think they wait for a while, but then just decide that there's really nothing they can do. They just have to sort of walk on. And then they, I think her and Mike, Heather and Mike start to bond a little bit more. Or like, I think they've kind of realized, look, it's, there's a whole sort of gallows sort of brotherhood where they know they're pretty much screwed. So they're like, there's a lot of smoking where they're just sort of chilling and smoking and talking. And then they camp again. And that night is, I found really terrifying. When you hear Josh screaming and like,
yeah,
they'd like, so Heather's outside the tent, look, like listening. And you just hear Josh screaming, like, and it just sounds horrific. It sounds like he's been tortured or something.
Yeah, because it's like they're shouting, "Where are you, Josh? Where are you? Tell us where you are, and we'll come for you." But do you think this is the Blair Witch mimicking his voice?
Well, I was between, to be honest.
To kind of like draw them out.
Yeah. So there's a couple of theories that I think potentially she's sort of like possessed him, you know, or like got a spell on him to sort of make him come to them, or she's doing something with her own voice. I'm not too sure, but either way, it's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with almost the entirety of this film.
Yeah,
is that fear of the unknown, the fact that you can kind of work out what you think's going on, but you never really know, and you never get anything confirmed as such. Yeah. That's the scary stuff.
Yeah. And then we have the morning after, and then we have that little package that Heather finds. It's like a bundle of, it's like UPS. It's an Amazon Prime sort of package, so drone delivery. It's like a wood, like a load of twigs wrapped around. I think they just sort of throw it away at first and ignore it. And then when Mike isn't there, Heather looks, and it's so gross. Like, you have no idea what it is. Like, I think you can see a tooth, like, quite prominently. But the first time I saw it, I was like, I remember as a kid thinking that it was an organ, and that terrified me even more, like a kidney or something. But it's not.
Yeah, yeah. I think when I first saw it, I thought it was maybe like intestines or something.
Yeah, yeah. But I definitely saw a tooth, and then just it's. I mean, it's. I think it's supposed to be quite ambiguous. Something that belongs to Josh.
Yeah,
should be on in Josh.
So it's part of his shirt as well, isn't it? Just kind of
Like sort of wrapped in his shirt. It. Yeah.
So she's either done a tooth pulling scenario on him.
Yeah.
Or she's cut him open, sliced him open, and got something out. Yeah. So I don't really know what it represents.
Well, in the wiki it says his shirt as well as teeth, hair, and what appears to be a piece of his tongue. I didn't get tongue, but I can see how you would think that.
Yeah, possibly. But yeah, I mean that's pretty horrible.
Yeah.
And now they were terrified before, but this is like we are moments away from death, terrified, surely.
Yeah, yeah. She doesn't tell Mike, and then they walk on for a bit longer, I think. And then they in fact I don't even think they do walk on that day, but it sort of cuts pretty quickly to them going to sleep again.
This is where Heather sort of does her little speech close to the camera, the iconic crying face directly into the camera, obviously, which was so derided and mocked. So by loads of different things, parodies.
Isn't that like Scary Movie and all those sort of films?
She's
taking responsibility for everything that's happened. And then not too long after that, they hear Josh cry again. Now we're like really ramping up to like a really scary finale where her and Mike, they find a house. They're like trying to find Josh's screams, the source of them. They find like this whole derelict house. And then Mike is like really like this. I don't know if I'd be able to do this because Mike just sort of storms in like towards the screams. And like he goes upstairs first. It's like there's like handprints, like child's handprints on the walls. He goes... Like all the way, you can hear Josh screaming. You can hear Mike shouting, "Josh, where are you?"
It's almost like he's just had enough now. So he's not.
He wants an answer. He just wants to know. He just wants it to end now. Yeah.
I mean, there's being scared, and now he's just like, "That is it. I need to find out exactly what's happening. I need to find Josh. We need to get him out of here. We need to all get out of here."
Yeah, it's a fever pitch at this point. Like it's complete. Chaos.
For the first time, we're cutting between two cameras, really, aren't we now, at this point?
Yeah. So Mike goes down, find like the screams coming from the basement. He goes into the basement. The camera drops. We don't know what happens, and it cuts to Heather doing much of the same. She goes downstairs, and we have like probably the one shot of any film that I think has stuck with me, out of any horror film that's stuck with me for as long as I've been alive. Like the shot of Mike standing in the corner. Like, I don't know, and you don't see anything, but it's just horrific. It's just a horrible image, and especially when that's been seeded earlier with the...
So it's the perfect callback to something that's been seeded, something that seemed quite throwaway that we didn't really... Because we didn't really find out much more about this Rustin Parr character. It's all about the Blair Witch. So the fact that that sort of plays out exactly the same as someone has sort of sold it, and then that's kind of it. We see that.
Yeah.
There's no money shot. There's no payoff. That's it.
And I like that. I think. It just seems like you said. Like I think when it doesn't give you all the answers, you're kind of left to assume or investigate or wonder and talk with your friends at school. Seems like the marketing is so baked into the film. Like it's really effective. It really works quite well.
Yeah, I think I've said this to you before, but I think it's one of the most effective endings in a horror film ever.
Yeah.
Just simply because it does. It is very, very simple.
Yeah.
But it kind of just ties everything up nicely, and it's just it's the mystery and that fear of the unknown which stays there.
You could just the thing like that final shot. You could just imagine if it just looked slightly to the right, you would see a witch. Or like something horrific, anyway.
Yeah, or even if you had like a foot sort of walk in front of the camera. But it's almost like as a supernatural entity, like it's almost like you can't. She somehow manipulates it so that she doesn't ever appear on the camera.
Yeah, yeah.
Not saying that she's like invisible at any point, but it's almost like the actual physical act of turning and pointing the camera directly at her just doesn't work. Yeah. So that's why we never ever see her when the cameras are sort of running around, and we never see her. Like she could be there at that point.
Yeah. It's ambiguous as well, into the sense to the point of I was looking at theories of how it actually ended, and some people were saying that it was actually just Josh who was screaming, because he was making sounds himself. He was there and he killed them. Like he almost as if he was possessed by the same entity that possessed. Whatever his name is,
Rustin Parr.
Rustin Parr. I'm sorry, Rick Parfitt. Rustin Parr. So whatever, like it might have been like some sort of ghost or entity that sort of possessed him. Could be the Blair Witch possessed him. I like to think that it was the witch, and like on the floor would have been some harrowed remains of Josh's body or something, desecrated and whatnot. But it's a good ending. It's a really good ending.
Yeah, yeah. It is a pretty much perfect ending, and I think it is an ending that holds up because it still gave me the creeps. It still made me sort of like freak out a little bit when I watched the ending. If you try and think of any other way it could have ended,
it kind of would have ruined it a little bit. I think like if it gave away too much, I think it would have ruined it a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as we know, it's just quite a small budget anyway, so to have a sort of money shot of the witch being there probably would have been the best. And obviously in the sequel, in the 2016 film, we see a lot more.
I might actually watch that again now.
Yeah,
now
yeah.
I've seen this so frequently, like recently, I think I might have to watch it again.
Yeah. Obviously it focuses a lot more on the supernatural element and almost like the weird other dimension black hole sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then we get to see something. Not entirely sure if that's the Blair Witch or that's sort of like a physical thing that she's created to sort of, because it seems almost too witchy to be.
And I do remember Blair Witch. Reading an interview or scenes of when Adam Wingard said that wasn't the witch, made it ambiguous. So he said something like, what makes you think it's the witch? It's really good. I think we're going to watch Blair Witch Project 2. The Blair Witch.
I remember Blair Witch 2 Book of Shadows being pretty awful, but I might go back and watch it anyway before I watch the other. Complete the trilogy
as it were, as such,
and then unlock the achievement.
Yeah. So in terms of directing, like in terms of, I think we pretty much, I mean, the directing style is so non-invasive, like it's so non-present because it buys into, it's fully committed into this documentary style. That it never really feels like there's other people there. Like it always feels like...
I wonder how many people are on set.
Yeah, probably loads. Maybe, I don't know, it wasn't a big budget. But like in terms of like shitty pants moments and jump scares, there aren't really any jump scares, but it's just a slow creeping dread that sort of runs throughout the entire film and then it just rises up to that fever pitch at the end, which I found really terrifying.
Yeah, but that's the thing. In fine footage films, jump scares are really overdone now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Pretty much everything's a jump scare in these fine footage films. Everything's just a build to a jump scare, to jump scare, to jump scare. Yeah. Whereas there's none in this one. It's just a constant terror that kind of like looms and then sort of like rears its head and then sort of hides away again.
Yeah. So are you ready for some trivia?
Yeah.
Okay. Number one, some people were convinced that Heather Donahue was actually dead and sent her mother sympathy cards.
True.
That's true. Number two, Josh's disappearance in the film was welcomed by the actor, who was also called Josh, since there was a concert, a music he wanted to watch.
True.
It's true. He wanted to watch Jane's Addiction. The Travis thought we were okay. I never really went into them too much, but they're pretty good.
Yeah.
The bundle of tied sticks consisted of actual human teeth, Josh the actor's hair, and watery jam.
False.
Yeah, so it's false. I mean, it just says human teeth and thingy's hair. I'm just assuming there's some sort of jammy substance.
Watery jam. That sounded like a very Luke Condor thing. That's the reason I said that was false.
Oh, by the way, just a little interlude here. So I got a tweet just now because I asked, is Blair Witch Project horror royalty or mumbling bore? At John BR Hell. I think it might be Burrell or something, says it's one of the best horror movies ever. So there's that. Okay, so the next question.
There we go.
And finally, the camera that Josh uses in the film, they ended up selling it on eBay, you know, because it's such a massive success, for $100,000.
Oh, Jesus. $100,000? False.
That's correct. It was $10,000.
Oh my god.
Okay, and the last one. So last night I heard some noises outside my bedroom, looked out the window. There was a naked man out there whistling the Blair Witch theme tune, true or false?
What's the Blair Witch theme tune?
You know how it goes. You've seen the film.
Is that a Blair Witch? true?
True. Yeah, pretty much so.
Yeah. Was he well endowed?
It was the cat's dad. Hey. You're embarrassing us.
I've heard a Blair Witch theme tune.
he was very cold. He wasn't whistling. He just. Oh. Ooh. if Blair Witch did have a theme tune, I think it would have been like a diegetic sort of just like atmospheric, like things breaking and rocks being slammed and an occasional girl laughing. That's all you need for the theme tune. Yeah.
Theme tune. And it would just be a repeat of Heather screaming. Yeah. Just a different pitches.
Did you see that? Did you see that? Yeah.
Did you see that? Did you see that? Josh. One good thing about this film is that if you ever came to a point where you're like, I can't remember who these characters are and what they're called, luckily they scream each other's names
so much
over and over again so much that you're just like, well, now I know exactly who they are. Because you ever watch a film and you come away from it and you think, I don't know anyone's name in that film.
Yeah, it never bothers me that much. Because I always think, glasses, hat man. Like, you know, there's like enough visual stuff there to get. I never think, oh, he was on 5 seconds ago, but I have no idea who he is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey, what's your name? What's your story? Where'd you come from?
Yeah.
I never worry about that stuff. But yeah, if you ever did worry about this stuff with the Blair Witch Project, you know, it's fine because they scream each other's name constantly, even when they don't need to. Josh, Mike!
So I would say one criticism of the film, I did find a few times it was like they were arguing and getting loud and angry with each other and then it would cut to the camera would just quickly cut, and then they'd just be smoking and like, yeah, this is bad, isn't it? And they'd be like, that was the dynamic that they did quite a lot, that sort of, or it felt like it anyway. Oh, I hate you. I really do hate, and then, man, we are in a shit. Like, just smoking. Like, it was almost promoting cigarettes. Look, chill out, have a cigarette. Life is better.
Are you arguing with your nearest and dearest?
Smoke.
I don't smoke a nice cigarette. It'll chill you out.
Are you smoking yet? Yeah. It just kept cut into a witch sort of telling you to smoke. Like that. You didn't see it. It was a...
And then knocking the camera over.
Yeah. Okay, so we need to grade the film. I know what I'm going to give it. What are you going to give it?
I've been thinking about these grades. I'm thinking about where I stand on these grades. And if I'm going to say A plus is a 10 out of 10, which I'm assuming an A plus would be a 10 out of 10, yeah?
Yeah.
I'd give this an A.
Okay, so you're giving like a 9 out of 10, an A.
Yeah, because I was kind of thinking about, you know, I work better with numbers, it seems. Actually, that's probably not true. I'm shit at maths. Yeah. But yeah, A.
Okay, so I'm going to give it a B. You know, I thought it was really effective, and you have to give it props for being the film that started this whole found footage craziness. And I genuinely enjoyed it. I really found those final scenes to be worth the entire, like all of the like small annoyances of the characters. I found those final scenes to be worth it. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a film. It's very much of its time, but at the same time, I think it has stood the test of time.
And you'll have a great time watching it.
And you'll have a great time, and you won't ever look at the time while you're having that great time.
Yeah. No matter what the time is. Okay, so this show, it's about time we wrap up. This show is brought to you by the Story Studio, Hawk & Cleaver. Head over to www.hawkandcleaver.com and grab a free book. Thanks to Kovacs, I think it's Kovacs, Cowman. I think it's Hungarian name, for our theme music. Just assuming. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider giving a 5-star rating review in iTunes, and remember to hit subscribe. Thanks to my co-host, Ben. That's at Ben_Errington on Twitter.
That's right.
For being a real horror dude. And thanks to myself, that's at Luke of Condor VK, for being another human horror man. Okay. All right. Bye. Oh, wait. Quickly. Oh. Next week, we are doing Babadook.
Yes, the Babadook. Never seen it.
Have you not? I've seen it. Okay, this will be interesting. I think you'll enjoy it. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.